Country, hello and welcome to the Isles Blog Podcast, the opt-out edition. I'm Joe Bono. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Isles Blog, and you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen at nyislesblog.com. On Monday, our guest broke down the much-rumored and much-discussed opt-out clause between the Islanders and Barclays Center in Newsday. That's Jim Baumbach, and he joins us now. Jim, good to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Jim, it feels like at this point that Islander fans are almost numb to the Islanders and Barclays Center news, talk of opt-outs and new arenas, but this felt a little bit different. I think we learned some new and important details in your reporting. For those that have not had the chance to read that story yet, explain what we now know regarding who can opt out and who can opt in first and foremost.
Well, the biggest thing is we now have a roadmap where we can see what exactly needs to happen every step of the way and when it needs to happen in order for this relationship to essentially end. You know, before we all knew that it was going to, the opt-out would occur sometime within these 4 years, and then after the fourth year, they, you know, the contract would be null and void and the Islanders would go on their way if one of the sides, opted out. But there was always this mysterious aspect of it in terms of who opts out when. You know, I had it described to me any number of ways where one side had to opt out first and that side didn't opt out from this side. So it was always this mysterious way where we didn't really know the details. It was kind of frustrating. This really basically tells us that essentially what needs to happen is after this upcoming season, a window for negotiation takes place. A window starts at that point. You know, say let's name next May, next June, if the for optimistic Islander fans, let's say next June. And, so at that point, they have to negotiate on a good faith basis between the Islanders and Barclays Center over the renegotiation of the finances. If at the end of that window expires by New Year's Day, and basically if they have not reached an agreement and that both sides acted in good faith, both sides have the choice to opt out, and they have to opt out by January 30th, 2018. So what is that, about less than 18 months from now? And then from that point on, if Barclays opts out, and this is a little confusing in the paperwork, it's written both ways, but if Barclays opts out, the Islanders are out after year four, and if the Islanders opt out, they have the choice to opt out after year three or year four. Now, obviously, are they going to have an arena ready if they build a new arena? They're not going to have an arena ready by the end of year three. That's the big, question mark. It's just that it seems strikingly impossible to do that in this market. But at least now we know they can leave. Now, maybe they go for, a short-term plan. You know, who knows what happens? Obviously, it's all up in the air, and that's even if we get to that point. But now we have that roadmap. Now we need to know what I's need to be dotted, what T's need to be crossed, and when in order for this to occur.
Jim, when they talk about good faith discussions, and I read obviously your story, and it seems like that's very vague and could be a lot, you know, many broad things. And for instance, you make reference to, even though it's highly unlikely, if the Islanders had a deal in place to build a new arena somewhere else, that would almost not count as good faith negotiations and possibly, you know, damage their opportunity to opt out in terms of the legality of it all. So what is your understanding of what good faith discussions most likely means?
Yeah, that was one of the real new nuggets in these documents that I learned. And that basically the way it was explained to me, I spoke to a lot of different experts. The most revealing one was someone who did not want to go on the record, but someone who has dealt with stadium deals in the New York market. And what he told me was essentially that includes the Islanders from today announcing they're going to Belmont or announcing they're going to Willits, because essentially how can they sit there at the table and negotiate a new financial terms on their Barclays deal when they've already had a deal in place to go to Belmont or go to Willits or go wherever? I mean, obviously in a court of law, they would be held as not being, up to that good faith standard. Now, the good faith standard is a very, broad and vague one. And in most cases, from what lawyers have told me, that it's hard to prove. But in this scenario, it does preclude the Allen. I mean, that would be a clear violation from what the lawyers had said to me, because essentially, how can you go into a negotiation if you have a deal completely in line with something else? It doesn't preclude them from going and seeing what's available to them, because obviously that helps them when negotiation time comes. But it does, from everyone I spoke to, it does preclude them from going and having that handshake agreement and saying, hey, let's go forward with this, unless, of course, that word never comes out and Barclays never finds out about it.
Jim Baumbach of Newsday is our guest. Follow him on Twitter, at Jim Baumbach. And you talk about not precluding the Islanders from going around and seeing what's available or what options they may have. A lot of people feel this way. How much do you feel that all this recent discussion around Queens and Willets Point and around Belmont, and obviously there's always the looming renovations at the Nassau Coliseum, is about leverage for John Ledecky and Scott Malkin?
Well, 100%. Leverage is a part of this. There's no doubt about it, because right now they have a home, and they have a home that's a new arena. It's not ideal, obviously, but it is better than the Coliseum in many, many ways. Maybe not for ways that affect the fan, but in ways that affect the product in terms of from the ownership perspective. Not in every way. Obviously, they wouldn't be looking around. But it is a new arena, and it's a home, and it's a long-term deal if they choose to have it that way. Leverage is a key point. As we see here, they're going to be having negotiations, a year from now. So why not get a jump start in that leverage and go into it and have it at play? But, I mean, is that 100%? The first time that Willets Point thing came up, and the first time I was able to get it confirmed, I think Bloomberg reported first. I had it confirmed a couple hours later, and the people I was speaking to, basically said, yes, leverage is at play here, but we want to see what else is out there. And from talking to other people on the other side of things, talking to the people involved on Belmont, talking to the people involved on the Willets Point aspect of things, it's reciprocal. I mean, the Belmont people are definitely wooing the Islanders, and the Willets Point people, the Mets, folks, are definitely wooing the Islanders. So, it obviously is in Ledecky and Malkin and the Islanders' interest to see what's out there, both from a leverage standpoint, but also, hey, maybe something is better. Maybe it doesn't come to fruition for X number of years. We don't know that right now. But the ideal scenario is your own home is not, not being a second-tier tenant, which clearly is what they are in the Barclays deal.
Now, Jim, a lot of people look at this deal and they go, especially knowing what the Islanders came from and what Charles Wong had to deal with the SMG lease, and go, the Islanders are guaranteed $53.5 million that will go up 1.5% on an annual basis. And they look at some of the other details, which I did not know prior to your reporting, specifically about the Islanders getting all the playoff revenue for tickets, as well as getting 70% of revenue that surpasses that $53.5 million payment, Barclays getting another 30%. To me, I looked at that today and said, that's a really good deal. Yes, you may be leaving some money on the table, but all things considered, this deal is almost, and the current lease is almost, in my opinion, kind of skewed towards the Islanders' favor more so than Barclays.
It is very, very, very difficult to say flat out, because we don't know the finances. I mean, these documents give us a very good glimpse into it, into what Barclays is making in terms of, and whether the Islanders are making any money on it. Obviously, I didn't know the playoff thing as well. I didn't know the 70%, 30% breakdown as well before this. The 53.5 number has been out there for a while. But the 53.5 number, you have to look at, there's also expenses that come off it. Some New York sports executives from other teams who looked at that document guesstimated that the Islanders are really taking home more like upper 40 million, like 42, 43, 44, once you take away the expenses that they're on the hook for. So there are other things at play. I think the experts I spoke to all agree that this was a good deal for the Islanders in the short term. One guy even referred to it as a 4-year deal or a 3-year deal, depending on when they opt out, if they opt out, with an extension for another 21 or 22 years. Essentially, it's certainty. It's guaranteed take home, which they didn't have a guarantee back at the Coliseum for. We knew for a long time that They were, net losers in terms of finances for several years there. In the short term, in that 3 or 4 year window, it is a good deal for the Islanders because it guarantees them that money. But that being said, you know, Ledecky and Malcolm paid New York City money, valuation on the team at $485 million for the Islanders. They would not get that if they were based in Nassau County, from what experts would say. And you want to be able to control your own revenues. And the thing they don't have here is they don't have control. They really are dependent, obviously, on the team on the ice. But everything beyond that, they're dependent on Barclays doing a good job, which affects them. And it's really a peculiar deal, is the way it's described to me, because they have so little control over their own product. And people told me they know of no other deal in the four major sports that is designed any which like that. They said that they've seen it like in Major League Lacrosse and sports like that. They've never seen it in a major sport. So it just seems, from that standpoint, that even if this remains in place, this agreement, this relationship, it seems like that will change to some degree if this goes forward.
Isles Blog Podcast, Joe Bono chatting with Newsday's Jim Bombach on the Barclays Center Islanders opt-out clause. Some new information coming up in recent days regarding the terms of their agreement. Jim, on the Barclays side of this, what would be their motivation to change this agreement? In what direction do you think they would go? Mikhail Prokhorov now in charge. Remember, all the kind of main players have changed since this original agreement was done. On their side, because when I look at it, I wonder whether or not they're really getting their bang for their buck, whereas if they do an amazing job drawing Islander fans into Long Island, increasing the fan base in Brooklyn, they're only getting 30% of that revenue during the regular season. From a Barclays Center perspective, what would you imagine they would want this new deal, if there is one, in a year and a half to look like?
You know what, the way it was described to me is that it's a very simplistic business when you run an arena, and that is that the worst thing that you can have is a dark night, because you're getting nothing on that dark night. So anything you can get on that night is more than you would have gotten. So going from that standpoint, the Islanders deal is a good one because it guarantees them 45 nights plus. Even on those playoff nights where the Islanders take home a significant portion, Barclays is still winning. In terms of what they would like to change, number one, I think they wanted to stay. I think they wanted to stay because it gives them a second anchor tenant. It gives them more visibility. It gives them more financial, firepower and strength. I think my sense, just from talking to people, is that the deal Barclays is happy with the deal. They have not only have a team there, they have control over the marketing and the promotions and the luxury boxes and the tickets and the ticket sale prices. I mean, they control so much of that, where in a typical lease, if the Islanders went there under a typical standpoint, they would just be paying the rental fee, and Barclays would just get the benefit of having them there and getting a cut of the concessions or whatever they worked out. So the sense I get, and the Barclays people have been not wanting to discuss this because I think they don't want to see it go down that road, but the sense I get is that, the status quo is good for them. So I think they would want to stay the same. Obviously the Islanders would want, one fly for, if this stayed the same and if this if these figures didn't change drastically, I think the number one figure the Islanders would want to change is that 1.5%, because that, over the long term, let's say this goes 25 years, 1.5% is going to be a lot less than what the growth of, sports revenues is. That's what everyone agrees on. So there's a lot at play. I think Barclays right now is, crossing their fingers and hoping that this deal stays as close as possible going forward.
I ask that question because there has been that sense, and there have been some other publications put out the idea that, Mikhail Prokhorov is not overly fond of the Islanders being in Barclays Center. He's not a ice hockey fan, despite the fact that people might assume that, with him being of Russian heritage, and that, this isn't a deal necessarily that he would have done, although he certainly knew what he was buying when he took over Barclays Center as a whole. You, based on your reporting and you talking to your sources, none of that kind of has any kind of relevance or truth behind it, to your knowledge?
I've gotten no impression. I've seen that written. Obviously heard that. You know, the limited amount of times I've asked about that, you know, I've got no indication that that's true, number one. And number two, just based on the response I got from people associated with the Barclays Center when the initial reports came out this summer about the owners looking around, they were not happy with it. I mean, I think the Barclays people who are running it, who are responsible for the finances, think this is a good deal. And you know, right now, I don't know how involved someone like Prokhorov is in the sense of you know, those 45 nights. He would be so inclined. Now, I mean, if he had another option to bring something in, if there's another team in the area, you know, then we're talking something else. But every indication I've gotten is that he's not involved enough to be that interested in whether or not the owner's dead.
Let's talk about this relationship moving forward. Obviously, John Ledecky and Scott Malkin now in. Ledecky's been very vocal. He's kind of the person out in the forefront, the kind of the face of the ownership group, at least to this point, speaking with Islander fans, speaking with the press. And they've talked about a lot of different things that can make this a better experience for fans coming to Barclays Center. What do you think, based upon what's been discussed, the Islander fans can maybe expect there be an improvement in 2016-17 over what was there during the first year at Barclays Center? They certainly got better as the year went on, but there was certainly a lot of room for improvement. What do you see is actually something that's tangible that could result in more people coming to the games?
Yeah, it's interesting to see how they got better, too. I mean, you said they obviously, you know, started from ground zero, essentially, in terms of happiness level, in terms of what the product they put out there. You know, they clearly took a lot of what the fans' distastes were that they could have control and tried to change it. I mean, I think that was clear just based on the game presentation. I think you saw a significant change in that from start to finish. It might not have been clear on the TV, but in person, you know, and just the fact that they went out and hired a group that was far more inclined to put on a hockey game. I mean, they were clearly in the beginning trying to put on, you know, an NHL game the way you would put an NBA game on. And even though the sports are going on at the same time, there's two different types of sports. I think they heard that criticism and they took that to heart. I think going forward, I mean, there's a lot of things you can't change, obviously. I mean, you know, they're not going to be changing the obstructed view seats. They've made that clear. I think what you're going to see going forward is things that they can change. You know, something as simple as having more Islander branding in the arena or making the home day when it's Islanders' home game. You know, sort of like how you know the Jets and Giants stadium over at MetLife, how the colors change. You know, when it's you know Jets to Giants. You know, I'm sure Jets fans argue that's too much like Giants and Giants fans argue that it's too much like Jets, and someone like me in the middle is looking at it and saying it's too blah stadium. That being said, yeah. they're doing everything they can to you know give each team its own feel. I think we're going to see more of that this coming year, where we're going to see the arena change colors, photos, banners, stuff like that. The fact that the store where you can go buy merchandise, I think it's called the Net Store, I wouldn't be surprised if they could work with that. You know, stuff like that, I think you're going to see make it feel more like the Islanders' home. I think my sense is just that that's where the Barclays people are really focusing their efforts, and I think that's where Ledecky's really pushing them as well.
How would major capital-type improvements work in terms of who pays for what? I mean, we all – no, it's far-fetched for anything to be done in terms of reconfiguration of the ice surface, you know, in proximity to where the seats are, especially the obstructed ones on the west end zone. But something like the ice, which has been a major, major issue last season, and talk about even free agents being hesitant to come to the Islanders because of how poor the ice is. Who shells out the money for that?
And
could that issue be something that's a point of contention between ownership, who is obviously representative of their players, and Barclays Center?
100%, that could be up for debate. You know, Barclays says they're doing what they can do within reason. One of that is that they hired this, or they posted a job. I haven't seen if they actually hired him yet. they posted a job like director of ICE operations or something like that, where they're basically hiring someone whose essentially job is going to be make sure this ICE is far in better shape, you know, every day along the way. Maybe that they're going to, I remember Gary Bettman when I asked him about it back in April or May, you know, he said maybe Barclays is going to learn to how they organize or how they schedule events, you know, where they don't have the turnaround, you know, from, say, hockey to boxing to hockey again. You know, I don't know how realistic that is, but that's something that they can look at. In terms of the expenses, you know, let's say they wanted to, you know, rip it up and put all new ductwork underneath, whatever they need to do, you know, that's a very good point, because when you read these documents, the expenses that the Islanders are on the hook for, and they are on the hook for a significant amount, they don't specify it, number one. And when I ask people about it, I'm told it's more like salaries of people who are on staff that Barclays had to hire specifically for Islanders, you know, stuff like, you know, selling tickets or whatever, you know. So it's a little unclear how that would work if they did something completely hockey specific. My hunch from reading those documents and the impression I've been giving is that would be on the hook for Barclays. But that being said, you know, I think something like that really could be a point of contention come negotiation time. I mean, maybe that's, you know, let's say the Islanders do have a handshake deal. I mean, this is all hypothetical. Let's say they do have a handshake deal to go build at Belmont or go build at Point. Maybe they go in there and demand, we're not going back unless you fix these obstructed new seats. And Barclays is saying, well, you know, how can we do that? You know, they're going to ask for something they know they can't give in order to get out of this on a good faith basis and end these negotiations as soon as possible so they can, you know, start building. I mean, so many different scenarios exist right now. In some cases, that's the beauty of it, and in some cases, that's the curse of it. But at least right now, we know when those conversations are going to take place and when, finally, the Islanders might and their fans might get some certainty here.
Jim, a couple of last questions from me. Certainly, your reporting was not intended to, as Lighthouse Hockey put it, fuel conspiracy theories over the next, you know, 15 to 18 months here about where the Islanders will go and what the intentions have been this whole time, etc. But given the three possibilities that fans know of, the diehards that live on Nassau and Suffolk County that just want to find out every day what the seating capacity is going to be at the new Coliseum, and then you have people obviously that think Willets Point would be a great location and others thinking about the Belmont, which of those three options right now in September 2016 do you seems the most possible and viable if the end game for Ledecky and Malkin is a new arena?
You know, that is a great question. I think right off the bat, you have to throw Nassau Coliseum last, a distant third, just based on the fact of what we know. What we know. I mean, it's going to be a size, not NHL size arena. And the other thing, let's start with this. I mean, it's going to be run by the Barclays people. So let's say the Islanders leave and opt out of Barclays. You know, Barclays is not going to be happy about that. Why would they then say, okay, let's go figure out a way to make it happen at the Coliseum, when it just seems so unlikely? Now, you know, obviously the almighty dollar always speaks louder than any rift or anything like that, but it just seems so unlikely, and that's without even getting into the issues that it's not being built for an NHL team. So as dramatic as that would be, I think that's a very distant third. Now, the Belmont and Willets one, you know, both of them have significant drawbacks as we sit here today. You know, Willets, you know, I can say with certainty that you know, Jeff Wilpon wants a hockey team there, and he's wanted a hockey team there for years. I mean, they had conversations with Charles Long about doing this very same thing, I think as far back as maybe 09, 10, whatever year the Lighthouse project fell apart. So that still exists. But right now, the area where they would build the arena, which would be right next to City Field, is their first choice. Right now, that area is part of a lawsuit in terms of these parkland people are basically arguing that it's parkland and that they are not allowed to build on it right now. And they're not even talking about arena. They're talking about the the wall that was going to go on there that's currently part of the plans. So that my understanding is that that ruling on whether that can either be used as a land to be built on won't come down till November, December, if not January, February. So at that point, at this point, I think we can't even gauge if Willits is realistic until we hear what that ruling is, and that's not going to come till holiday time. Belmont's a different story. Belmont is state land. It is technically Long Island, but it's not the town of Hempstead, even though it exists there, because it's state-owned property. So it does bypass a lot of the issues that were at play when the Lighthouse project was going. But there are other issues there, and as much as I'm being told that the Belmont people or NYRA and the state, are really trying to woo the Islanders, you know, they have a process that's already, you know, well a long way there, and they would have to start over from scratch. And I know Islander fans probably wither at the idea of starting over from scratch, considering how many times they started over from scratch with the Coliseum. I think like 12 times in the last 15 years. So, I mean, that one is probably the most realistic, just because it doesn't have a lawsuit against it, and it doesn't have, an arena that's already in place that's being designed by the people they are leaving to be a non-NHL arena. You know, so that's probably the most realistic, but that's not saying much. So, I mean, there's a lot of things at play. We'll see. But right now, it's really hard to gauge it beyond what's wrong with the scenarios as opposed to what's right about it.
Joe Bono, Isles Blog Podcast, finishing up with Jim Bomback of Newsday. Follow him on Twitter at Jim Bomback, all over this Islanders Barclays Center issue for a long time, and certainly over the next 15 to 18 months as we approach that January 2018 date. Just for clarification for some Islander fans, the six games at Nassau Coliseum, this was an agreement between Bruce Ratner and Nassau County, but not part of the Islanders Barclays Center agreement. So as a result, those games not being played requires a payment to the county. Is that correct based upon your reporting?
So yeah, let's back it up even further. The Barclays Islanders agreement was from 2012. The Ratner Nassau agreement is 2013. So the Barclays Islanders agreement comes first, then Ratner Nassau. Charles Wallen at the time was on board with it. He even sent a letter to Brett Bjornmark, asking them that, or saying, you know, this is, I'm on board with this, and in order for this to happen, we need to change our agreement. So that's even in writing, but what that never happened, essentially. So who knows what happened between then and now, but that never happened. So the lease, as it states right now, the license agreement, and obviously Wong's out of the picture, and Ratner, to some degree, is out of the picture. He's still involved, far more than Wong, but Wong's out of the picture in terms of deciding. So as it stands right now, it's not in the agreement, and if those games are not played, the rent that Ratner's group pays Nassau County, and I would be guessing right now off the top of my head what it is, it goes up by $1 million per year. So there is a penalty payment in there. That's why Nassau is always quick to say that Ratner's going to abide by his lease. That doesn't automatically mean that he's going to provide the Islanders. It means that, well, he's either going to provide the Islanders or he's going to give us $1 million, you know, and the county in some ways wins either way. But yeah, right now that seems far-fetched, just given what we've seen from Ledecky and seeing that, you know, the Islanders are not a party to that deal right now, and they seem to be not even interested in being a part of that deal.
And as strange as it would be, the novelty of those six games would be something else. Final question, you mentioned Charles Wong, and earlier today on your Twitter timeline, you put up a photo of Newsday when the agreement happened between Islanders and Barclays Center, with Charles Wong quoting that the lease was ironclad. What do you think his motivation might have been to make that statement, knowing that this clause was out there? Was that maybe him knowing that he was not going to be around when these discussions were going to happen with him, with maybe the thought being that he was going to sell off the team in a couple of years?
Well, I mean, I won't guess that. I mean, I do believe the Islanders were for sale around that time, and they had been for sale. And I think he realized that they were going to be more marketable in New York City as opposed to, you know, riding at the lease in Nassau Coliseum. But that being said, I've been around Charles for several years now. You know, I've had enough conversations to know that he kind of speaks a lot and kind of thinks, you know, second, you know. The ironclad thing kind of took on a life of its own. One thing he said to me that was on the front page many years ago was that he was sorry that he bought the team. And it was for a story I did on their finances. This is maybe like 08. And I kept asking him afterwards, well, do you regret it? And he said, no, I don't regret it. If I had to do it again, I would do it again, but I'm just sorry I bought the team. And I'm like, well, I don't understand. How can you be sorry you bought the team and not regret it and would still do it? You know, it doesn't make sense. But, you know, so some things he says, you know, I think just sound good. And the ironclad thing, you know, I've thought about it, and maybe he was referring to just the fact that it was ironclad and that this was going to take place. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of these people in high-powered positions, they got there from, you know, knowing what they can say and what they can explain away. And you know, it was ironclad in the sense that it did happen. The Islanders went to Brooklyn, but it wasn't ironclad in the way that they could get away from it and not in 25 years. And there is that line in that story that he indicated that there was no opt-out clause, but he didn't say that. You know, he was asked it and kind of gave an answer that indicated there was not one, but he was not completely straightforward. So maybe looking back on it, maybe we were not, we should have gone back a second and third and fourth time and said, wait a minute, let's be clear. Is there or not that clause in here? Because, you know, his answer seemed clear, but obviously it was not, you know, years later.
Jim, and before we let you go, any final thoughts as to what Islander fans should want to hear, how they should be handling this situation moving forward? Because it's been a long time since they've had any kind of certainty regarding this stadium situation.
No, I appreciate you having me. And the thing I could say, I said this to Ledecky when I met him, I guess a month or two ago when he had that meeting with reporters. I was the one who started out by saying, let's start off to be clear, you know, do you view Barclays Center as your long-term home? And he said, yes. And he continued on and on and on. And I said, okay, you know, you said yes, but I want to follow up. And I said, Islander fans have been through uncertainty for X number of years. I wanted to see if there's any clearer way you could say it. And he said, Barclays is our home. You know, that's as clear as as I can be. And clearly he wasn't being 100% clear because, at the same time he's having conversations with Willits and Belmont. But I think back to that because I tried to explain to him that this uncertainty has defined a generation of Islander fans. And I can only hope that come January 2018, you know, Islander fans can finally get that gift of certainty because they certainly deserve it after all this.
Certainly a cloud over this franchise. You had quotes today of John Tavares talking about how the Islanders are often kind of misconstrued of what their identity is. And I think some of this has a lot to do with that because they're kind of always on that unsettled footing that you don't know what's going to happen later. You had Yahoo talking about earlier today that, you know, could this play a part in renegotiations with John Tavares, even though he's been quite clear that that's his intention to stay with the team. You know, if there's uncertainty as to where the team may be, even though people don't want to believe Seattle and Quebec, could that play a part in Tavares' decision-making over the next couple of years? There's a lot going on, and again, we really appreciate you giving a lot of your time here today, and we look forward to your coverage on the subject moving forward.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Isles Blog Podcast. Visit nyislesblog.com for an archive of the show or subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. Follow the team on Twitter @IslesBlog and send comments to nyislesblog@gmail.com.